also be discussing the dynamic audio power management. This is a method to try and use the least amount of power possible in the audio subsystem. And with that, pop and click reduction, we're talking about how we can minimise pops and clicks. Finally, we're also talking about scenario setting as well. This is a way to simplify use of the portable DAC device from the user's point of view without having to go into that mixer panel and change many settings if he wants to change the audio usage of the device. And we'll have a little roadmap at the end. So, portable audio architecture. It usually consists of a single codec. This is really just to keep the BOM bill of materials low and keeps the space on the PCB quite low as well. Codec is usually controlled either by I2C or by a three-wire interface, for instance SPI. The digital audio interface for codec is usually I2S or AC97, or sometimes it can be a PCM interface. If you've not heard of these before, I'll give a brief description later on. Basically, they are a digital interface that transmits digital audio unencrypted. PCM audio from the host processor to the codec, where it's then converted to an analog signal. The audio subsystem may also have external aspects. For example, you may well have a speaker amplifier, you may well have a jack socket as well to plug in a headset. So we have to take these things into consideration as well. Basically, we have a diagram here of a portable audio subsystem. We have the codec at the bottom there, and between the codec and the CPU, we have the control interface, which is what I mentioned, your I2C or SPI. And on the right hand side there, we have the larger digital audio interface, which can be AC97, I2S, PCM. AC97 is quite a popular one, designed by Intel around about 96. Aimed at PCs, it's a 5-wire interface. It's quite heavy on power compared to I2S or PCM. The reason for that is because AC97 runs at quite a high clock speed. I've also shown on this a microphone, internal speaker, and a headset and headphones. Okay, so what's else a system on chip missing? For system on chip devices? Well, currently the codec drivers are often tightly coupled to the underlying CPU hardware. So at the moment we have roughly four 8731. Now 8731 is a codec made by Wolfson. So we have four drivers for this one chip at the Linux moment in various guises. So it'd be nice if we could all use the one driver. There's also no standard method to signal user initiated audio events, and these would be events like if you insert a headphone or headset into your portable device, and also needed to detect what has been plugged in as well. For instance, if you plugged a microphone in, you would want different audio output or audio scenario than if you plugged a headset in. So we've got to take that into consideration. Also, importantly, current drivers tend to power up the entire codec or the half of the codec they're using. For instance, with AC97, current drivers will power up the whole chip, which is quite wasteful. Other drivers I've seen will, if you're playing back audio, will power up the output side, or if you're recording, will power up the entire output side, which is quite wasteful. It's not too bad on a laptop or PC when you have a larger power source, but when you have a small mobile phone or PDA power source, it can eat into a bit of power there. So, what does ALSA system on chip offer? Well, it offers complete codec independence. It separates the codec from the platform and machine code. So it allows reuse of codec code, for instance, 8731 driver. It allows reuse of the platform code, which for instance would be platform code for, say, the Intel X scale processor. And it separates the machine code as well, which would be code for a specific machine like the Corrigan PDA, the Spitz PDA from Sharp, or from, say, a mobile phone. It also allows us easy digital audio interface integration. We describes the digital audio interface so that the digital audio interface on the codec can be matched to the digital audio interface on the system chip. Also, our dynamic audio power management, as I mentioned before, is a method to minimize the power used and clock and click reduction. And machine-specific mixers and controls. For instance, you may well have a control to power up the amplifier on a specific machine that has nothing to do with the codec. So we've added a way for you to add that in as well. Finally, high-level usage scenarios and profiles. That is planned at the moment. We're going to add that. That allows easy switching from, say, MP3 playback to doing a voiceover IP call. And user event notification, i.e. your JAP insertion. I apologise for the long text at the bottom talking here. In edit mode in OpenOffice it looks fine, but just I noticed last night when you actually go to present, tends to screw it up there. What I've got there is the architecture, and the top there is the platform there, which basically consists of the processor and the memory. So you're really looking at the DNA engine there for moving the audio to and from main memory. And you're also looking at the I2C interface on the processor, which is, we have an old, the kernel network has its own, and it has a long time, its own API for that, and for the digital audio interface as well. The codec side of things, down at the bottom there, basically consists of the digital audio interface for the codec and the mixers for the codec. Finally, the machine there at the bottom there is things like mics, speakers, headsets, whatever that is plugged in on that specific machine to that codec. This is different for every sort of machine. It's different from a phone to a PDA. Now, codec driver independence. This way it allows us to reuse this codec driver on all the platforms without making any changes to it. How do we keep it platform independent? Well, we've created a digital audio interface API. This allows us to match the digital audio interface from the codec to the system on chip. As you can see from this list here, the audio interface is quite complex. Interface is usually four or five wires. It's used to transmit the data from one to the other. And it kind of many variables here, what I've listed below. There are other variables, but I've kept them out there at the moment. We basically make these variables into like a bit mask for the codec and a bit mask for the system on chip, which we can then combine. So codec and system on chip are then matched to runtime. So after we go to say play an MP3 44.1K, the codec driver and the system on chip driver both know the audio interface has to work to 44.1K. So then we can match our interfaces together at that point. We can also then further reduce or refine them for best power usage, i.e. there is no point in running the interface at a higher clock speed than necessary. And we can also pick the best standard. For instance, if there are several standards available to us at that clock speed, we can go for, say, I2S, which is quite a mature standard, rather than left justified or right justified I2S, which are less well supported. So the codec and the system and chip interfaces are then configured and then the stream starts. I'll show you that in action here. We have our bit mask here for the codec. Again, I apologise. I did have text up top here describing what it was, but in this mode it is invisible. So I think I heard that Michael Meets was here doing a presentation for a moment. Maybe we'll speak to him about that afterwards. Basically, what I have here is a 1 for set and a 0 for unset. So there's our codec mask. Our system on chip mask for the interface. I'm giving an example here at 8K. So you can see it's slightly different, 8K. We'll then add them together. This gives us that. The red 0 is the one that's different there. You can then further reduce things down. Take, for instance, the left-hand side of the audio interfaces that we want to use. This one could be I2S, this one could be left justified, stuff, a less well-defined interface. get the codes implement as well. If you're passing in a bit of ask like that, set up your interface or to set up your code, all you really have is a large switch statement, which you can just pick off the bits and set up the code accordingly. Moving on now to the dynamic audio power management. It's a method to use the least amount of power possible in the audio subsystem at all times. Now this power usage depends on audio stream activity, for instance when you play or capture a stream. It also depends on audio routing within the portable device. Also includes the audio routing within the codec as well. Now, DAPM is transparent to all audio applications, so you do not need to recompile anything in order to use it. It happens within the kernel driver itself. And all applications will use the lowest amount of power at all times. Now, we did this being adding it to the Zorus PDA recently, and we can play MAD player, M player, without any modifications to it at all. It applies to the codec and the machine drivers as well. It applies to the internal power blocks on the codec. I mean by a codec, I mean a chip that will convert your analog to digital and digital to analog signals. These chips typically contain, say, in the order of maybe 10 or more internal circuits inside them that can be powered up with them independently, depending on usage. You can also apply this to the machine level as well. Some machines have amplifiers to amplify the speaker noise. Some machines also provide mic bags, which power the microphone as well. These things are not required to be in use if the microphone or speakers are not in use. For instance, if headset was in use, you would not need that. Okay, so how does it work? Good question. The codec driver builds a path, links all the internal power blocks via its codec's audio controls. So for example, if you had a DAC that was connected to a mixer and connected to an output, a bit of code would describe that path, audio path, between the DAC and the output. I'll show you a diagram of that in a minute. The machine driver also does the same thing. The machine driver says, okay, the left output pin on the codec is connected to the left speaker on my machine, but via an amplifier. So that way the DPM knows, DAPM knows to power up the amplifier as well. The path internally of the codec and the machine is walked recursively, where it streams start stop. Audio control change. You can control the audio paths within the codec, so you can reroute the signals differently. If you were to reroute the codec, audio away from the speaker to a headset, there would be no point keeping the speaker powered up and its external amplifier. And also it takes external events into consideration as well. For instance, your jack insertion. The example I just mentioned there with the headset, the speaker change would be caused by a jack insertion. Here we have our basic portable audio codec here. The left hand side, I've got a key of what these components are. So if you're not familiar, the circle with the little cross in it is a mixer. It's an analog mixer. What that does is it can take in several analog signals and mix them together to produce one output signal. Below that is a square, which there is represented here with arrows inside them, is a MUX. And that's essentially a switch that has several inputs and one output. Further down, we've got a triangle with an arrow through it. It's a PGA, programmable gain array. We have on the inputs to amplify the microphones, like A and like B there. We also have it on the outputs to amplify the output there as well. ADC and below that DAC with the A and B in the boxes there. An ADC converts analog signals to a digital signal, and DAC does vice versa. Every box there with a red line around it indicates a section within a codec that can be powered up and down independently. And below that, the numbers there are the power in milliwatts that can be burned by keeping that component on. You'll notice on the right hand side that the speaker driver is quite heavy, it's quite a high using power. It's one of the headphone drivers. An ADC uses more than a DAC. So moving on, does anyone have any questions on this diagram, which is quite important to work? Okay. Here's an example here with MP3 playback via headphones. And so we can see that the signal is going from the core in the middle, which again hasn't rendered correctly on this, and it goes out through the DACs, converted from digital to analog, to the mixer, and eventually to output the headphones. So what we have to power up there is the core, the DACs, the mixer, the VGAs here. And that is this line here. I've added it all up, we've got 27 milliwatts. Older drivers, who were unaware of routing, would tend to power up the speaker driver as well, which is on the right-hand side. Now, I haven't added 150 there for both. The reason for that is because some drivers are sensible, and the machine would have an analog switch, so you would not be driving the speaker there, but it would still burn about 3 milliwatts of power each. So that's quite a common scenario. If I gave that example with respect to AC97, AC97 drivers would have powered up this input side as well. It's quite inefficient. So the power there for playing an MP3 power saving is 6 milliwatts there compared to an older style drive. Another example on the input side here is if you're recording a memo with the internal mic. So the internal mic is plugged in here, or the audio path, should be that out of there. Goes in that way. Through the amplifier, into the ADC, which converts it to digital signal, and then to the core. The core will send it to the CPU then. So we're only burning about 9.3 milliwatts of power. In an older system, you would have both sides powered up. So you basically burn a lot more. The power saving then is 6.3. How this works is the scenario is set to record from the internal mic. So this is set here as a valid output, sorry, a valid input. And the ADC here is set as its end point. So the system knows the start point and the end point, it then checks every single widget, by widget I mean one of these blocks here that can power up and down, checks that for a valid path from the input to the output. If it has a path, it will power up every widget on the path. So widgets that aren't on the path, for instance this one here, will not be powered up. So that's how it basically works. Every time you start or stop a stream, it will check. Every time you change a mixer, for instance if you were to change one of these muxes, it's going to alter the routing table. So it would then check the DAPM power again. Okay, moving on. Finally we have phone call. Phone call requires an input and an output. So as before, this time we're recording from the headset, right? We've got a headset plugged in now. It's going in this side, it's going to the ADC, course powered up, and it's going out the left of the headset. You'll also notice top here we have a path going up along and down. This is called sight tone. This is the voice you hear when you speak into a phone, the voice you hear through. So if there was any amplifiers in between there, they would be powered up for the side tone as well. So the point here is that it works with side tone, record, and playback. And the power saving we have then here is with 21.3 milliwatts. So that's roughly using half the power compared to the older traditional style drivers. It also covers the machine level, as I mentioned before. We have an example machine here which has an experiment length bias, which say for example might take maybe a milliwatt or 2 milliwatts. And it has, on the right hand side, it has a speaker amplifier, which could take 20, 30 milliwatts of power. So these are enabled from the CPU by a GPIO, which is quite common. We also have in the bottom a jack socket, so when we insert the jack, it gives an IRP to the CPU. Now, these are all taken into consideration with the audio power management. It will power up, power down, accordingly, depending on usage. So it's just shown that it applies to the codec and it also applies to the machine. Basically, interconnections are made to all the codec and machine audio paths when they're constructed. For instance, the left DAC is connected to the left mixer via the left playback switch. switch could be a switch on your ALSA mixer panel, which you can turn on and off. And it would know if it was off that there was no path in between the DAC and the mixer, and if it was on, that it would be a valid path, so these would be powered up. Likewise, on the machine level, this is a codec pin, left-out headphone. You know that left-out headphone is connected to the headphone jack. So this requires the hardware.
Those paths, are they, well, are all the possible paths are coded in the driver, or is there a way that like each component knows to which part it's connected and it's automatically calculated?
The paths are coded, the codec paths are hard-coded in the codec driver, the machine paths are hard-coded in the machine driver. But at runtime they are matched. For instance, it knows then that the codec driver has a left-out HP pin, and the machine driver refers to that same pin as well. So at runtime that is then matched, so it can calculate the audio. All mixer calls that affect the power are intercepted in order to reconfigure the machine and codec. So every time you change something as a mixer, it goes to the power management before it goes to the codec. Likewise, with audio streams, start stop. So if you were to play Mad Player or any player, when you start it up, the open would be intercepted, and setting up the PCM parameters would also be intercepted. And this is used to work out the power state as well. For instance, it knows if you want to do playback or capture. And finally, normal power management calls are also handled, e.g. suspend and zoom. During suspend and zoom will likewise power down the whole codec. Okay. When you use schemes like dynamic audio power management, you tend to get side effects. One of the side effects is pops and clicks. Now, if people here have an iPod, when you don't use your iPod for, say, several minutes and come back to it and go to play again, you'll hear a small pop. That's the iPod powering up. It's codec internally. That's a sort of fact of life with this at the moment, is that people get a small pop. But there are ways to reduce that. If you didn't reduce it, you'd get quite a large pop, which would be, which could potentially hurt your ears. So you can reduce that. And how to avoid it is you can keep the power on the whole system at all the time. Like in a PC, if you start your sound card up on a PC, you will get a pop when the driver loads. You won't get any other pops thereafter. That's because the PC sound card, every compartment of that codec is powered up all the time. But on a small device, that's extremely undesirable. Pops and clicks can be minimized by sequencing the power on-off events in which it's in specific order. So we can sequence, we can turn the blocks on in a specific order, and we can reduce. Now, the logic walks the tree and powers the widgets by path and type. So it does that if the path change, or for instance, if you're changing as a mixer or the stream start. The current order for powering up widgets is stored within the core, but I'm going to move that out to make a fair codec in the future. That's to reduce the box and click stuff further. Newer codecs, talking later this year and the year after, will reduce pops and clicks a lot. These codecs have not been manufactured yet. So, how do we do this? Well, here is our output path here. You do not get pops and clicks on the input path. You get them on the output path of your headphones or speaker. How we do this is we apply a digital mute to the output, which is the stop sign, the right hand side there. Then power up the core, followed by the DACs, then the mixers, finally power up the PGAs. Once they've all powered up, we release the digital mute. And that way, rather than powering up everything at the same time, we get a far, far smaller pop, which is bearable to most audio files. And that's what you hear on your iPod. Another aspect of ALSA audio is If you ever opened Alice Mixer, you can see it's quite a large mixer. You know, it does probably big, what do you think? You know, if you're listening to your MP3 one minute and you get a voiceover IP call coming the next minute, how are you going to quickly change your settings to go from playing MP3 to call before the call ends? So what we're looking at is a scenario whereby we can easily and quickly change the audio scenario from, say, MP3 playback to voice call. And we're looking to do this so that the user can quickly do it. So as I just said there, there are too many mixer settings to change, and it can't be done quickly enough. And as I've previously said, it would be great if we could do it in one step. The examples there are hi-fi, headphones, the end, or MP3 playback, or change to voice call handset. I've also described the actual input and output device as well, because that's quite important. So, basically, it's designed to allow high level control over the audio configuration. And we're at planning stage at this moment, so if anyone has any ideas, please email me. I'm going to add an extension to AlSwift to allow scenario mixer definitions to be stored in the sound card configuration file. For instance, in that configuration file, you can store a definition for headphone playback, speaker playback, or for that specific machine. We also have a small API to query all the scenarios that are supported to set and get. Even to monitor the audio events, for instance, when you plug a jack in, say for instance you're listening to MP3 on the speaker, you plug your headphones in, this daemon would then could listen, say, okay, we've got an insertion here. I'm going from playing MP3 in headphones, the speaker, I need to change to MP3 playing headphones. So that would be able to do that automatically.
What you're saying, if they have this, say from people with pizza, for example, would you send some kind of event also for the user space?
Yes, that is a user space event. I'll go to that in a minute. Maybe I should have done that slide first. But we're going to have it emit an event that the daemon switches the user space process can listen for. The machine driver internally will know about the event as well, because it's obviously going to receive it. Yeah. So how are we going to describe these scenarios? One idea at the moment is to list the virtual inputs and outputs of a machine. For instance, it could be things like headphones, speaker, internal mic, or headset mic. With these virtual inputs and outputs, we could then describe the scenario. So a scenario could be a voice call headset has an internal mic with its input and a speaker as its output. Coming to that question now about external audio events. The asynchronous event is usually driven by the user, or say for instance, getting a phone call, having an impact on the audio subsystem. I've listed two there. Jack insertion is the main one, really. And I'm also stuck in the headphone mic detection, because it's possible to detect what's plugged into the jack socket. So these events require changes to the audio routine within the machine, the power management configuration, and possibly user space applications. We're planning to add a jack insertion and previous events to the kernel input system. The kernel input system could be easily enhanced by adding some extra events. So, for instance, you would open up the input system and you would read. But when you receive an event, you may receive a jack insertion event, or you may receive, if you have headphone detection, a headphone detection event. You can then go and change your audio routine, your power, and any user space application change. Just a quick roadmap of where we are and what we're trying to do. We're trying to get to version 1, which is the current version, and it seems to work well on the Sharp PDAs at the moment, and in my main store at work. Although I say it works well, I submitted a patch to Richard on Friday, which now crashes the machine on suspend. Oops. You want to add the scenario and the event notification. So if anyone has any ideas with respect to that, I'd be glad to hear them. Currently we have support for the PXA 2XX platform at the moment. However, as I get time, I'll be adding support for other platforms and other projects. I really want to move the power management into the Alice audio core so that also laptops can benefit from this. It's not just portable devices, like phones and PDAs, your laptop can benefit as well. And adding the codec pop and click sequencing to the codec driver, that will let better control. I'd like to thank these people here who have been involved in the project and who have helped me out there. Mostly I'd like to thank Richard. Without Richard, it would not be in the state it is in today. And finally, has anyone got any questions? Good.
How would you handle multiple codecs or sound cards instead of headsets if you're storing new sound device?
Right. It's not handling Bluetooth at the moment because Bluetooth is an external, basically your external interface. That is something we are thinking about for version 2. Version 1 at the moment is aimed at your basic single codec PDA or phone. It also gets more complex when you consider cellular devices as well, because you've not just got an applications processor sending audio to the codec, you've also got a communications processor sending audio to the codec. So I'm going to address issues like that in version 2. It's probably important if we get version 1 out to the, for people to test and use more at the moment.
Do you have support for the X-scale processors?
Yes, we fully support the X-scale processor, but that's the only processor at the moment we're supporting. I do have a Alchemy on my desk and a MX-21 on my desk. I've not had time yet to look at that. But that's fully supported there. Okay. Basically, the codec can, the jacksaw usually has an IRQ on it, so say a codec, a CPU or codec GPIO. But the codec can also determine what's been plugged in by measuring the resistance and impedance. For instance, headphones and microphones have different values. So it can then say, oh, I've had a headphone plugged in or I've had a mic plugged in, which can then be fed up to user space and to the rest of the drive. Not yet, no. We're just at the planning stage today. We kind of kicked off the project late October last year, so I've not really had a chance to fully design these aspects yet. But if you have any input, I'll be glad to hear. You're an embedded program.
Could your system also work, like, for example, if the codec is actually replaced by a DSP or something? Or there would be a DSP in the chain somewhere?
Providing there was a way to notify the of any routing changes within the codec or stream starting and stopping. I mean, for instance, if the DSP was controlling the codec.
Well, for example, or that if for normal audio, just like, for example, screen events, you want a click or something, that would go just to the codec because the CPU is fast enough. But for example, you could have like MP3 decoding done on a DSP or an external MP3 chip and then send.
And then the codec.
Yeah.
The applications processor would still be aware of that because it would have to start off the MP3. So if the application processor is aware, then yes, that's probably possible.
In the past, I can't help detecting different inputs, whether it's a headset or any other type of connection, by kind of treating it like a key in a way you're kind of debouncing voltages on some GPIO. How would you approach that in a more shared approach that isn't so specific, say, to your own board implementation?
It's basically seen. But I'm not a hardware engineer, so I can't really describe exactly how it's done by the codec. But if you want to know, I can find out for you.